just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. Big finish. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
John. Everybody.
Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Is it true?
Two, tous, two.
That makes two.
Hello, welcome to a Six String Hayride podcast, a journey through the world of classic country music with your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. We will be covering all of the great topics in country music, from mama to prison, to dancing, to drinking, to guitar picking, to all the crazy deal with the devil, honky-tonking stuff you do on Saturday night, and how you try to get it past your Lord on Sunday morning. So climb aboard the cart, and let's go.
Everything sounds good. Technology seems okay right now. Yeah, no weirdness with glitching or anything. Do you want to try and kick it off like normal?
Yeah, you know, the usual thing. Okay.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get rid of, not go cat go.
Hello, and welcome to the Six String Hayride Classic Country Podcast with Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. This is our second anniversary episode. Thank you very much to everyone who has been listening to the show at some point during the last 2 years. We really appreciate it. Without an audience, there's no show. So again, thanks very much. We'd like to remind you that you can find us on Facebook at Six String Hayride. We have a Facebook group, and you can find us through email at sixstringhayride@yahoo.com. The six is always a word, not a number. And of course, we would be eternally grateful if you went on to Patreon and looked us up under Six String Hayride there. Folks, usually in one of the Hayride episodes, we don't, first, it doesn't really come up. This anniversary special episode is more of a free conversation between Chris and myself. There is a bit more cursing than usual. So, children, please pour your parents a drink and get them to bed early, and then you can enjoy the rest of the episode.
Why are we here? What's life all about? Is God really real? Or is there some doubt? Well, tonight, we're going to sort it all out.
So 2 years ago, Chris and I figured, well, we've had a lot of crazy ideas over the years. We might as well pick one and do something about it. This was it. We started right before Halloween of 2022. With murder songs, kind of a look at the old murder ballads, the old Irish and Scottish tradition, and how that came into Appalachia and then into the American tradition of murder songs.
Murder. It's been a part of every civilization since before the dawn of recorded history. The killing of another may be driven by monetary gain, passion gone wrong, or the desire for justice. Sometimes, the reason is nothing more than a sick son of a bitch making the decision to take a life. Songs about murder have been such a part of traditional music that a subgenre was named for them, murder ballads.
For murder, we went to prison. And since then, it's been an incredible variety of topics. It's been a lot of fun. There's been a road trip up to Detroit to see Willie Nelson and Bob Weir. We're going to be on the road again with another concert review coming up this fall with Ricky Skaggs here in Chicago. We've had a nice look at some movies, including the June Carter documentary. We've had the Trilogy of Terror back in our early episodes, looking over Rolling Stone's incredibly ridiculous list of best country albums and then responding to that. And then we've had a nice run of episodes over the spring and summer of this year covering country music by decades, going back to the 1920s.
I wonder what it used to be like in those days. In those days. In those days. In those days. What are you doing? I'm trying to have a flashback.
All of that has been a lot of fun for Chris and myself. We have learned a lot about how to do this along the way. We have learned a lot about the music along the way and some really nice surprises. And again, we could not do this without an audience. At whatever point in the last 2 years you have climbed on board the Hayride cart, thank you very much. We'd love to have you. Please stick around. We will entertain you for years to come.
He asks each traveler three questions. He who answers the five questions, three questions, may cross in safety.
But what if you get a question wrong?
Then you are cast into the gorge of eternal peril.
Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Jim. It is an interesting thought to realize that we're 2 years into this. I don't remember exactly when we started talking about the idea. It was somewhere in the summer of 22, I want to say, since the first episode did come out just before Halloween, you know, a few days ahead of time. It really felt like it took forever to go from concept to the first episode dropping. But since that time, it really feels like almost no time at all has passed. And yet here we are 50 episodes in. So, you know, I got to tell you, I'm really hoping that we're just kind of hitting our stride. It seems like we've gotten a lot better at some of the skill things. Our just ability to speak about subjects without a lot of the and ah and well. I mean, I still feel like I personally do way too much of that. But it does feel like, for the most part, we've got those things under control. Your editing skills have gone from, you know, decent to good to really good.
Well, don't you know? That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang.
Busted down on Bourbon Street. Sit up like a bowling pin.
I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried.
He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice.
Tonight is gonna be a jailbreak. He's somewhere here in town.
Would be nice if we had better equipment, but I really do feel that once we get to the point where we do, the skills that we've gained along the way will really shine. So, you know, again, it really felt like it took forever for us to go from talking about doing a podcast to doing a podcast. But since we started, it just feels like no time at all has passed. One of the things I've really enjoyed is how we've not glommed on to something that we've decided is perfect and formulaic, and we're just going to repeat it over and over again.
Talk, it's only talk. Arguments, agreements, advice, answers, arguments.
articulate announcements. It's only talk.
We've done so many different things. We've had episodes that were about groupings of songs, like when we did murder ballads or prison songs. We had an interview when we interviewed Dean and Joe. We have covered lists of albums, you know, as you mentioned with the Trilogy of Terror. We did that episode about Yesterday's Wine, the Willie concept album. So we've kind of jumped all over the place. And that to me has been one of the things that's really kept the show fresh. You know, I don't feel like every single episode I now have to go look up the top 10 this's or that's, and now I got to do this thing and that thing and put this here and move that there. And, you know, it really feels like we've given ourselves the freedom to just create things that are interesting to us at that particular moment in time. And if you would have asked me at the beginning of the show what I thought that process would be like, it's really nothing like what it's wound up like. It's been very surprising in some ways. It's been very enjoyable in some ways. But I will say some of the stuff I've enjoyed the most.
Reasons to be cheerful, part three.
One, two, three.
Obviously, for the entire length of time that we've known each other, and you know, before that as well on both sides, music has been a very, very important part of my life. It's something that I've had a very deep and meaningful relationship with since I was a little kid, first able to start asking questions about songs that I liked. You know, who is this by? What is that? Oh, what makes that sound? You know, those sorts of things. I've always had this deep and meaningful relationship with the music that I've enjoyed. But in some ways, it's kind of like whatever music I was into at that moment, I was engaged as sort of a passive observer. Meaning like when I was a kid and I really got into the Beatles and Stones, that was awesome. It was the Beatles and Stones, but it just sort of passed by in front of my face. And I didn't really do much of anything to direct that one way or the other. I just sort of rode the wave that appeared in front of me. So I would learn things like the song Come Together by the Beatles, which is hands down one of my favorite Beatles songs. You know, those kinds of things were around, but I wasn't trying to break them down or analyze them or figure out what makes their component parts. And I don't just mean from, oh, this is the bass, this is the drums. I mean, like, I never really thought analytically about any of the music I listened to. Maybe a little here and there, but certainly not on any large scale.
I grew up listening to mostly the Beatles and the Stones, and there's a little Willie Nelson or a little Johnny Cash on the side here. I was in a house where the older people watched Hee Haw, so I was exposed to that. But now, you know, like when you mentioned Come Together, and that is one of the Beatles tracks that I use whenever I finish setting up a stereo and, you know, measure the speakers out and all that. We've done this in your basement, actually, yes. And I do this at home. When you listen to Come Together, it's a great track. Well, it's a great track, period, from probably the Beatles' best album. But it's got a very distinct and prominent bass part. It has a little bit of a whisper and a high end in the vocal. And then it has a guitar track that's really good for the high end. So for checking out your speakers, it's great for that. But this other idea you mentioned in terms of kind of connecting the dots. When I hear Come Together, you know, now that we're doing the podcast and some of these things with music are more studious or academic even, what I hear is Come Together could be a really great Dr. John record because of that slippery, swampy feel to it. And from there, you connect back to traditional Cajun music. And from there, you connect back to the accordion showing up with Bob Wills or with Gene Autry, and this idea that it's all one song. Yeah, I mean, I just got from Abbey Road to Dr. John to Gene Autry in less than the typical six steps that people count these things in. It's all one song.
With the podcast, I find that when I dig into music, first of all, it's been great because it's been a trip back to memory lane.
Gather round, friends, why hurry? Let's all stay a little longer.
You ought to see my blue-eyed Sally. She lives away down on Shinbone Alley. The number on the gate, the number on the door, and the next house over is a grocery store. Stay all night, stay a little longer. Dance all night, dance a little longer. Pull off your coat, throw it in the corner. Don't see why you don't stay a little longer.
You know, of course, I grew up listening to Willie's version of Stay a Little Longer. And I grew up listening to a little bit of Bob Wills here and there, but then you learn, oh, Stay a Little Longer is originally by Bob Wills. Those are the kinds of things that I would notice here and there when I was younger. But now I find that when I make a connection like that, and perhaps that's a bad example because that's a connection I made long before the podcast. But when I find that I make a connection like that, I have this tendency to really want to dig into it and explore it and figure out what led to that happening and where, what came from that happening. Like, where did that lead to? What did it inspire? What did it influence? And I don't think I would have this same relationship with music at this point in my life without the podcast driving that. The other thing that's been absolutely enjoyable from my side is this has really forced me back into a very serious relationship with country music.
Well, I'm a honky-tonk man. Love to give the girls a world to the music of an old jukebox. When my money's all gone, I'm on the telephone singing, hey, hey, mama, can your daddy come home?
The more we've done this show, the more we've had, especially the discussions we've had when we're not recording, when we're just trying to work out where we go from here. So many of those things are more meaningful to me now because I hear these connections I didn't necessarily pick up on before. They were always there. I just wasn't tuned to the right frequency myself to notice them.
A simple binary code transmitted by carrier wave signal. Radio.
What about you? What are some things that you weren't necessarily expecting to learn that have, you know, landed in front of you along the way for these past couple of years?
You're right, Chris. We started planning this out in the late summer of 2022. The first episode comes out October 27 of 2022. It's late July when we come up with the name of Six String Hayride. Which at the time was just, oh, until we think of something better. We seem good for now, considering we have a theme song and refrigerator magnets and guitar picks and all that. So from late July of 2022 until mid-October, So a few months, but that was, buying microphones, trying to decide where to start, a lot of notes back and forth. We were like kids at the beginning of the school year when we first started, because we had Word documents and detailed scripts, and this was mostly Chris. And I would kind of throw something together really quick and text it to him. But yeah, at the beginning, the amount that you were writing stuff out in great detail, I had not even thought about, well, how am I going to record this or how am I going to produce this? I was thinking about, do I have to type that much too? Because I don't really want to type that much. So I guess in some ways it was a nice distraction from thinking about how to get the words out to the public. I appreciate that because, yeah, I've learned quite a lot. When we started doing this, I had a lot of experience in home recording with a portable 4-track. I had a lot of field recording experience with live music, and I'd had a lot of DJ experience, mostly college radio and weddings. And when we started, the software that I had was the basic Windows software that you would use to make a slideshow or a whole movie, which are more video slanted. For the sake of common decency, this is an audio only program. So yeah, we had, if you want to make a slideshow of your kid's birthday, oh yeah, we had great software. If you want to make a podcast, it was an interesting learning experience. And I think you're right about the better equipment too. I mean, we have a laptop that's maybe one step ahead of the Flintstones car in terms of technology. We have great microphones and we have a great record collection and fairly good minds. But yeah, software and equipment, always something you want to upgrade.
Phillips found an empty storefront in a jumble of auto shops. It was located at 706 Union Avenue. In January of 1950, the Memphis Recording Service opened for business. His calling card read, "We record anything, anywhere, anytime."
I just got to open me a little studio. I know I can build it with my own damn hands. I don't have any money, but I can build it with my own hands. And I can get by on less than anybody with my equipment because I can make it do more. I've got to have it.
There is a story that is relayed by Phil Lesh, the bass player from the Dead. He's talking about Bob Weir, who is the other guitar player in the band that's not Jerry Garcia. Bob was the youngest one in the band. He was only 17 when they started. He was only 47 30 years later when they were done. So we're talking about somebody who wasn't super well versed with life experience or anything else early on. He's trying to describe to a recording engineer in 1968 or thereabouts. So again, very young Bobby, he's 19 or 20. He's trying to explain what he wants to hear on the record. And the words he's using are heavy air. He wants to hear the sound of heavy air. And of course, the recording engineer is losing his mind. He's freaking out, screaming, "Heavy air, he wants heavy air, what the fuck, whatever."
And I was trying to explain to Dave what I wanted in this particular section of the song, and it was something I couldn't find words for. But what I wanted a space in the tune, and I described it to him. What I want here, Dave, is the what I want here, Dave, is the sound of thick air.
But when you listen to something like Come Together, what Jim is describing is that swampiness that would make it a perfect Dr. John song. That's the feel that Bobby's talking about. It's not something you can hear. It's something that you sense. Now, this is a story I've known for 30 years, but it means more now when I can make these sorts of connections that have come from more deeply listening to the source material. You know, I used to listen to music, and now I feel like I study music more than I listen to it.
What Chris and I are trying to do is kind of welcome people into the community of classic country music and rockabilly, and then try to talk about the relevant cultural things that kind of go along with that. You know, what was the style of that time? Was there radio yet? Was there albums or cassettes or TV? You know, to kind of give a little bit of a history overview as well.
Loving the old ways from being abused, protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do? We are the Draft Beer Preservation Society. God save Mrs. Moss and good old Mother Riley. We are the Custify Appreciation Consortium. God save the George Cross and all those who were. Affinity. God save the little shots, China cups and virginity. We are the skyscraper condemnation affiliates. God save Tudor houses, anti-table pavilions. Loving the old ways from being abused, protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do?
Kind of like a revelation or something that I'd wondered about for years. And then because of having to work on the show, I've learned about it. The first one is that, like, going all the way back to probably high school, my favorite singles, one of my favorite songs to listen to, whatever, you know, type of music, doesn't matter, has always been El Paso, the Marty Robbins track. That was one of the early songs that we kind of, you know, hitched our hayride wagon to when we started out. It's a song we both love. And for, you know, again, going back to the 1980s, I've loved this record, and I never knew who the guitar player was. I was pretty sure it wasn't Marty Robbins himself. But El Paso has some of the most intense guitar fills ever on it. It's incredibly melodic. It's really unique. It really makes the track. I mean, it, as much as the shocking ending when the guy dies, spoiler alert, you know, the guitar part in that record really makes it. And I just never knew who it was. And before the internet, I had no way to find out. And then over the course of doing these episodes and learning more about Marty Robbins and about the records, the name of Grady Martin came up.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina. Music would play and Felina would whirl.
He was one of the Nashville A-Team, you know, one of the top studio guys, incredible guitar player. And now I know who he is, and I've been able to look at pictures of him and see what kind of guitar he was playing and listen to a lot of the other music that he made, and to know, like, oh, this is the guy. The other guitar player like that, where I had the same experience because of the show, is the pedal steel player, Pete Drake. I'd known kind of about Pete Drake because he'd worked with Ringo, he'd worked with George Harrison, but it was another one of what's that guy's name kind of thing. And he was one of the big innovators early on of the talk box, that kind of effect where you have the voice mingle with the guitar. It's a very unique kind of sound. When Chris and I talk about it, you know, I often describe it as an Indiana Jones type thing. You know, you go into the cave, you dig around, and you come out with something fantastic. And hopefully you don't get crushed by, you know, a giant rock or zombies or whatever. I also hate snakes. But yeah, that, you know, that treasure hunt where you hear a record and then you, oh, that's the guitar player on it. Oh, that's the songwriter. Oh, that's the guy who produced it. It just really increases your appreciation. And because it's music, you know, I think with any art, there's, I would disagree with folks that would bring up that idea of, well, you can be too academic about it, or you can overanalyze it, or, you know, you can know too much. And I would disagree with that, because if it's good art, that emotional kick, that kind of the feeling, the story, the experience that it delivers is always going to be greater than the sum of the technical or the academic knowledge about the thing. You know, I could go so far as to know how tall Grady Martin was and what kind of car he drove and, you know, what his favorite color was and what his dog's name was, or, you know, any of those kind of ridiculous things. And when I hear El Paso, that guitar part is still, it's still going to be magic.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got to hear. Wow!
I don't plan on quitting anytime soon. It's been a lot of fun. And our music collection, which, you know, I modestly say was pretty big and pretty good 2 years ago, has gotten a lot better, you know, because all the country music, all the rockabilly, we still need to get some more bluegrass. But this has been a really good thing for the record collection. We really had no idea what we were doing early on, aside from other, you know, music talk shows that we had listened to. And a lot of the original idea was, well, let's just assume we're in the car for another long ride, going to a concert somewhere, and the kind of things we talk about.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
What we were not including in that point of view at the time was that us being in a car for a long time talking about music and kind of associated cultural issues is what led people like our friend Heidi, but it was people, you know, like Heidi that said, you know, could you guys just shut up and do a show or something? We spent a lot of time trying to make the leap from what we found to be our entertaining personal conversations about music to a format that would convey the warmth and the fun of that, but in a format that would make for a familiar radio or podcast type program. We don't expect listeners to actually get in the car and drive all the way to Pennsylvania with us for one concert and then to turn around and drive back.
You know, it's interesting the point you make about the long car rides. And first of all, listeners, he's not joking. We actually drove 770 miles to Pennsylvania for one concert. And when I say we drove 770 miles, what I really mean is Jim drove 770 miles. Chris had to add another 90 just to get to Jim. So that made for some long, long day. Don't you mean days plural? No, we drove there. The next night we saw a show and then we came home.
If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tell this old world.
You know, Jim's right. The impetus from the podcast kind of came from these really long car rides we would take where we would be going to see something or going to do something. And we would just have these conversations about music. And sometimes other friends were around and that's where they would come up with these ideas, like Heidi telling us, hey guys, go make a podcast. But it turns out that it's a completely different phenomena, just gabbing in the car about some shit you like versus trying to actually structure your thoughts into, you know, the flow that you need in order to record a podcast and have it make sense.
Words in papers, words in books, words on TV, words for books, words of comfort, words of peace, words to make the fighting cease, words to tell you what to do, words are working hard for you. Eat your words, but don't go hungry. Words have always nearly hung me.
And the two things that I really want to say about that is, first of all, listeners, if you actually heard what we recorded and then how it comes out, you'd be blown away, because it's quite common for Jim to take bits and pieces throughout the conversation and stitch it together into one narrative piece of dialogue where we're going back and forth. Because of the way we record the show, we don't actually respond to one another back and forth in real time. That would lead to a lot of chaos where mics cut out as somebody's over talking. So we do kind of, I say my piece, then Jim says his piece, then I respond, then he responds, until we kind of feel we've said everything we need to say. But Jim then takes that and clips it into, you know, a really well laid out and planned out narrative. I mean, there are times in which one of us will refer back to something the other said, well, you know, as you mentioned earlier, this thing or that thing, and it might be something that we talked about an hour ago in real time, but that gets thrown in there and then Jim picks up on it and stitches it together in a usable format that flows well. So, you know, that is a skill that had to be picked up above and beyond just long talks in the, you know, car rides.
Debates, discussions, these are words with a D this time. Dialogue, duologue, diatribe, dissension, declamation, double talk, double talk.
The episode, Chris has been reflecting on how he relates to music, the intensity that's changed, the kind of immersion aspect that's there now. But we kind of look at songwriting and storytelling a lot more deliberately, you know, than we did before we were doing the show. And the example that popped into my head was the old Eddie Cochran song, 20 Flight Rock. You know, he's got a girlfriend who lives on the other side of town. She lives on the 20th floor. The elevator's broken down. He has to use the stairs.
With a record machine, when it comes to rockin', she's a queen. We love to dance on a Saturday night. All alone where I can hold her tight, but she lives on the 20th floor of town. The elevator's broken down, so I walk one, flight three, flight four, five, six, seven, flight eight, flight more. Up on the 12th, I'm starting to drag. 15th to 4, I'm ready to sag. Get to the top, I'm too tired to rock.
You know, that might be one of the best accidental forms of birth control, you know, ever. Because he keeps saying, get to the top, I'm too tired to rock. Well, Eddie, we feel sorry for you. Take some vitamin E, get some rest. You'll be back.
Well, she calling me up on the telephone. She come on over, honey, I'm all alone. I said, baby, you're mighty sweet, but I'm in bed with the aching feet. This went on for a couple of days, but I couldn't stay away.
But in the song, the elevator is broken down and the line is, you know, we send it to Chicago for repairs. I thought, wow, that's, you know, really kind of picky detail sort of thing. And then I remembered from working in an old office building here in Chicago a long time ago, but Otis elevators were the kind of common, you know, they were the main manufacturer of elevators early on, and they were in Chicago.
Well, it's sent to Chicago for repairs. Till it's a fixed, I'm using the stairs. Hope to hurry before it's too late. Love my baby too much to wait. All this climbing is getting me down. To find my corpse draped over a rail. But I climb 1, 2, flight 3, flight 4, 5, 6, 7, flight 8, flight more. Up on the 12th, I'm ready to drag. Well, the 15th floor, I'm starting to sag. Get to the top, I'm too tired to rock.
And for Eddie Cochran, who never lived here a day in his life, to kind of pick up on a detail like that and work that into a song where the main gag is, there's too many stairs, I'm too tired to get with my girlfriend. That kind of detail in songwriting, it really kind of sets apart the great storytellers from the meh. And you know, Eddie Cochran's only 21 when he dies. So to be that sure of yourself as a writer and to be that involved, you know, at that young age, that in a song that's barely 3 minutes, to get the sexual gag in and to get that little, you know, nice level of detail in the way you tell the story, that's something that I see a lot more now. When we talked about Felice Bryant and her husband, Bootlo, you know, and the songs they wrote for the Everly Brothers, it was that same experience.
Dream, 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 dream. Dream, dream, dream when I want you in my arms. Charms whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream, 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 dream when I feel blue in the night and I need you to hold me tight whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream.
The other thing I really have gotten quite a bit of enjoyment out of since we started the show is the Everly Brothers themselves. It's not like I was wholly unfamiliar. Of course, I would have known songs like Wake Up Little Susie probably as far back as I have memories, but I never really did any sort of a critical or deep dive. I became a little more familiar with them the first time I watched the Ken Burns country music documentary, because there is quite a bit in there about Felice and Bootlo Bryant and their relationship with writing songs for the Everlys. But it wasn't until we started preparing for some of the episodes of this show that I really sat down and did a deep dive. I had this 75 track Everly Brothers greatest hits thing that I listened to on repeat over and over and over again in the car everywhere I would go.
Party last night at 1 o'clock, it ended in a heck of a fight. When someone hit my Jenny, she went out like a light. Oh, Jenny.
Chris, I have we actually have a question that came by email. Mr. Richard Fader from Fort Lee, New Jersey. And this is a two-part question. Chris, it's become a very well-known thing on the Hayride podcast that you are the world's biggest Willie Nelson fan. A lot of knowledge, a lot of discussion, a lot of, you know, topics revolve around Willie. So with that, you know, being a big part of your identity on the show, Richard's question comes in two parts. And this is, you know, again, your relationship with Willie Nelson and his music. Are you ever going to give him up? Are you ever going to let him down?
Nice. We just Rickrolled our podcast. That's great. I'm never going to run around and desert him. Never going to make him cry. I'm never going to say goodbye. May or may not tell a lie, but I would never hurt him.
Well, folks, there you have it.
Okay. Coming at you from the Cash Carter kitchen, we have Southern-style sausage and cheese balls. For this one, you're going to need 1 pound of Southern-style breakfast sausage, 1 16-ounce package of shredded mild cheddar cheese, 2 cups of baking mix like Bisquick. You're going to preheat the oven to 350 degrees. You're going to combine the sausage, cheese, and baking mix in a large bowl and blend well. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Combine the sausage, cheese, and baking mix in a large bowl and blend well. Roll out small balls in your hand, a little bit smaller than the size of a ping pong ball. Place the balls on a large cookie sheet or broiler pan. Place the sheet in the oven and bake for 25 minutes or until the sausage is well done and the balls are browned. Remove and serve while still hot. For this recipe, John and June's son, John Carter, has a tip for us. You can pre-bake the balls for 10 minutes and then let them cool and freeze them in a plastic bag. When ready to serve, reheat the frozen balls on a cookie sheet in a 400-degree oven for about 15 minutes or until hot and nicely browned. Enjoy. Hayride listeners, we're going to deliver a little treat to you here. We're going to drop in some of our first gag reel, which is precisely the moment Jim was talking about. You are going to hear me lose my shit trying to just say words like balls and roll the balls in your hand. And I mean, it you will hear when you hear this recipe how long it took in real time. And this is with all the, I mean, Jim eventually had to take like half a dozen or more shit takes and edit them together into one barely passable take. It was like, when I say the man's editing skills are improved, this is probably why. Coming at you from the Cash Carter kitchen, we have Southern style sausage and cheese balls. For this one, you're going to need 1 pound of Southern style breakfast sausage, 1 16-ounce package of shredded mild. For this one, you're going to need 1 pound of Southern style breakfast sausage, 1 16-ounce. For this one, you're going to. I should have been worried about cheese or shredded. All right. For this one, you're going to need 1 pound of Southern style breakfast sausage, 1 16-ounce package of shredded mild cheddar cheese, 2 cups of baking mix like Bisquick. You're going to preheat the oven to 350 degrees. You're going to combine the sausage, cheese, and baking mix in a large bowl and blend well. You're going to... I really should have read this recipe first so I would have got the giggles out. Okay. You'll understand.
Wow, this is great.
You'll understand in a second. Okay, here we go. Roll out small balls in your hand.
Don't feel okay. Like a nice grilled cheese.
I got it.
Are you going to start over?
Yeah, I should actually.
All right. You know what? I'm not.
But I'm only going to start over with.
I'm not even here.
Okay. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Combine the sausage, cheese, and baking mix in a large bowl and blend well. Roll out small balls in your hand, a little bit smaller than the size of a ping pong ball. Place the balls on a large cookie sheet. Place the balls on a large cookie sheet or broiler pan. Place the sheet in the oven and bake for 25 minutes or until sausage is well done. The balls are brown? What? All right, I got this. I can nail this. There's only like one more sentence. Place the sheet in the oven and bake for 25 minutes or until the sausage is well done and the balls are brown. Remove and serve while steamed.
You might want to try something else.
There's only one sentence left.
Remove
and serve while still hot. Makes 30 to 40. John Carter.
What?
Balls. Makes 30 to 40 balls. I'll say that actually. Makes 30 to 40 balls. John Carter's tip. You can pre-bake the balls for 10 minutes and then let them cool and freeze them in a plastic bag. When ready to see. We don't need John Carter's tip, but I'm going to do it anyways. On this recipe, John Carter actually has a tip for us. So John's tip is you can. Why I got to say tip?
Because you already said balls.
Yep.
I'm not sure we have a usable take here.
I think we do. I think we have enough to cut together. I'm pretty sure we do. No, really.
I'm serious.
Okay. I'll start from the beginning. I should be able to get through this. I think I've got the giggles out. I just need to read. The problem is I come to something new, it starts again. So John Carter's tip, you can pre-bake the balls for 10 minutes and then let them cool and freeze them in a plastic bag. When ready to serve, reheat the frozen balls on a cookie sheet in a 400-degree oven for about 15 minutes or until hot and nicely browned. Okay, now that I've said it all, I should be able to get through this, and I will start from the top. Southern-style sausage and cheese balls. For this one, you're going to need 1 pound of Southern-style breakfast sausage, 1 16-ounce package of shredded mild cheddar cheese, and 2 cups of a baking mix such as Bisquick. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Combine the sausage, cheese, and baking mix in a large bowl and blend well. Roll out small balls in your hand, a little bit smaller than the size of a ping pong ball. Place the balls on a large cookie sheet or broiler pan. Place the sheet in the oven and bake for 25 minutes or until the sausage is well done and the balls are browned. Remove and serve while still hot. This will make 30 to 40. For this recipe, John and June's son, John Carter, has a tip for us. You can pre-bake the balls for 10 minutes and then let them cool and freeze them in a plastic bag. When ready to serve, reheat the frozen balls on a cookie sheet in a 400-degree oven for about 15 minutes. Damn it! I was so close. That was a great fucking save. You saved the shit out of that recipe.
There have been a few times where I have built a Chris Wainscott sentence out of one or two words from many sentences. And you're right. I've literally been forced to learn how to edit a single word out of something.
But one of the biggest improvements has been something that you'll actually hear in our next episode. So we're going to do an episode of our top 10 favorite Western films.
Rolling, 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 rolling,
rolling. Yeah! Keep rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen. Keep them doggies rolling, roll.
And of course, because it's the two of us, you won't just hear about 10 films. You're going to hear about Jim's favorite 10 films, my favorite 10 films. There'll be some crossover. You hear about all kinds of related films, right? Like you can't talk about The Magnificent Seven without talking about The Seven Samurai. And why would you want to talk about Seven Samurai without talking about Rashomon and talking about Kurosawa in more depth? So you'll get your usual hayride treatment. So the change you'll hear when we record the top Western episode will be you're going to hear one episode. You're going to hear about all the movies, and that's going to be it. If you go back and listen to the Trilogy of Terror...
Los Angeles, he walks again by night. Out of the fog, into the smog. Relentlessly, ruthlessly.
I wonder where Ruth is.
Doggedly, toward his weekly meeting with the unknown.
Which, for those who aren't familiar with the term, it's episodes 3, 4, and 5 of this podcast. If you go back and listen to those, there are albums that appear on all three episodes, and we felt compelled to discuss all three at great length, you know, on all three episodes, I should say. So there are going to be things that we talked about ad nauseum until we were literally like practically, what color ink did they print the cover photos with?
I think you're right. You know, with the top 20 albums, we had the Rolling Stone top 20, some overlap with our personal choices, but your top 20 and my top 20, I think 9 or 10 were the same album, just in a different spot. You know, my number one was your number two, that sort of thing. And since I got that specific, my number one was Johnny Cash Live at San Quentin, 1969. That was number two on Chris's list. You do not have to go back and listen to the whole 8 hours of those two episodes now. We've also put the list in a little video format on our Facebook page. Again, just saved you a lot of time. We've already kind of discussed a little bit about 2027 being the 100-year anniversary of, you know, the Big Bang of the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers being recorded in Bristol. 2027 will be the 100-year anniversary of that. We already know, you know, how to look at a map and drive from here to Bristol. That would coincide with the 5-year anniversary of the podcast. So, you know, I think we'll pull that off. We've already talked about, you know, how much fun it would be to go down there and do some research and some recording. You know, like they say in the movies, it's 625 miles to Bristol. We have a lot of coffee. We have a lot of music to listen to. We even have a sunroof. And we're not going to be driving at night because we're older now and we don't really do that so much. But yes, look forward to the Six String Hayride 5th anniversary special coming to you from beautiful Bristol, Tennessee. Chris will be on the other side of the street, which is technically Bristol, Virginia.
He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old bandit run.
I think it's just wanting to feel like you made an impact, like you helped somebody think of something that they found interesting, or you led them down a path that even though they might have done 90% of the work from that point, you got them started on the path. You know, those are the kinds of things that I enjoy. So when I do get feedback from time to time, either from people that I know or when listeners have reached out to us randomly, either in our Facebook group or through email or whatever, you know, that's the stuff that's really meaningful. Yes, I would like the vanity part of walking into a country bar and people are like, oh my God, it's a podcast guy. Somebody get him a beer and get him backstage. But that's not the truly important thing. What's truly important to me is just learning more about this music that I love and feeling like maybe I can help other people who love the music learn more about it. For listeners who may not yet have joined our Facebook group, Six String Hayride Classic Country and Beyond. Reason Jim and I started that group is so many of the groups out there on Facebook have some, you know, you're not a real fan of country music if you can't name the musician in this photo, or if you don't know what this is or that is. And we just didn't want a group with any of those kind of BS rules. We wanted something that was designed to be inclusive of anybody who's either already a fan of classic country or who's interested in learning more.
Come on aboard, I promise you we won't hurt the horse. We'll treat him well, we'll feed him well. There's lots of room for you on the bandwagon.
Some of you may be familiar with the Proust questionnaire. For those who aren't, it was not invented by, but it is attributed to Marcel Proust because they found a copy of this that he had done. It was part of a Victorian parlor game where questions would be asked, answers would be written in a confession book. I don't really understand how the game worked from there. Were you trying to figure out who it was or what they meant? I don't know. But this then reappears on Inside the Actor's Studio in a modified format delivered by James Lipton. So, Jim, what is your favorite word?
Love.
What is your least favorite word?
Liar.
What turns you on?
Folks, the question says creatively, spiritually, or emotionally, as June Carter used to joke, this is as sexy as I'm going to get. I would have to say music and laughter.
What turns you off?
Dishonesty.
What sound or noise do you love?
A Chet Atkins Gretsch guitar.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Fingers on a chalkboard. Spent decades teaching in colleges around Chicago, and oh, Lordy, I hate that sound.
What is your favorite curse word?
Motherfucker.
Samuel L. Jackson. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Astronaut.
What profession would you not like to do?
Accountant.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Can you set up my stereo for me?
Holy shit, that's good.
Okay, so Chris, your turn. What is your favorite word?
Together.
What is your least favorite word?
Impossible.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Spending time with friends, listening to music, talking to my pets with my wife.
What turns you off creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
People who can't be bothered.
What sound or noise do you love?
It's hard to describe, but there's a certain sound that you pick up on when you get comfortable living in a place long enough. And I know that not everybody experiences this, but a lot of people know the feeling of feeling like you're at home when you walk in the front door. To me, that's actually a feeling I can hear. Like, I hear the sounds of my house because I know the sound that little clock makes in the living room, and oh, that's the compressor on the downstairs fridge, and there goes the this thing or the that thing. So I love the familiarity in my day-to-day life that comes from that.
That is an incredible answer. That's really cool. What sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of people making excuses.
What is your favorite curse word?
Shit fuck. Comes from the book Ball Four by Jim Boughton. He was a pitcher for the New York Yankees. And apparently he and the manager of the team he was playing for at the time he wrote the book, they used to like to say shit fuck or fuck shit all the time. And it meant completely different things the way they would use it. So I've really glommed onto that one.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would love to do something in academia, some sort of research.
So you want to get paid to sit in a room with books?
Yes, that would be amazing.
Let's see if we can get you a grant. What profession would you not like to do?
You know, I got to give a lot of credit to my stepfather here for refusing to teach me his profession. He installed carpet and tile flooring, essentially. And he just refused to teach that to me when I was younger. And I thought that was horrible because there was so much money in that profession. You could make so much. But by the time he was in his early 40s, he was already pretty broken down. So I'm going to go with any sort of physical construction stuff like that.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Your pets have been waiting for you.
Well, folks, thank you for listening to the podcast over the last 2 years. We have had a lot of fun. Thanks very much. Chris is going to dive into the John Wayne cocktail guide for us with a stocky drink, and then we'll have a Irish potato surprise recipe after that. Chris?
Thanks, Jim. This one is The Barbarian and the Geisha. It comes from the film of the same name. Jim and I just very honestly admitted to one another that neither of us has seen or even heard of this one, but it is a John Huston film, so maybe I'll put this on my list to check it out. This is a sake cocktail and is listed as the perfect accompaniment to viewing the film. So for this one, you're going to need 2 ounces of sake, a 1/2 ounce of dry vermouth, a 1/2 ounce of apricot liqueur, and an orange peel for garnish. You'll stir the ingredients with ice and strain into a cocktail glass, garnish with an orange peel.
A few episodes ago, we did the Roseanne Cash potato salad. Fantastic dish. It's really good, but it's starting to get a little colder out now, and it's getting closer to Halloween. This is a traditional Irish creation called Colcannon. You will need 4 potatoes. You can use russets or Yukon Gold. Cut them up into chunks. You will need 4 tablespoons of lightly salted butter, 2/3 of a cup of light cream, 1/2 of a small green cabbage, 6 scallions chopped up, salt and pepper. Cook the potatoes in a large saucepan of boiling water for 15 to 20 minutes. Drain the water out, mash up the potatoes, put in salt and pepper to the extent that you like. I would also recommend a little parsley. Add the butter and the cream and stir it up really good. The potatoes should be soft. Make sure you keep it warm while you're cooking the cabbage. Cut the cabbage into quarters, remove the core, shred the leaves finely. Cook the cabbage in a large saucepan of boiling water for 1 to 2 minutes. Drain the water out. Mix the potato and the cabbage together. Stir in the scallions, as much salt and pepper as you like. Again, I would recommend a little bit of parsley as well. Maybe just a pinch of rosemary. And you serve it out to people. And again, it's a traditional Halloween dish. Enjoy.
We did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
For some people, small, beautiful events is what life is all about.
Hello, country.
I'd like to remind you to email us at sixstringhayride@yahoo.com. Six is spelled out. You can also search us on Facebook as Six String Hayride, or what we'd really appreciate you doing is finding us on Patreon under Six String Hayride as well.
Well, folks, thanks again for joining your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley, on the Six String Hayride Classic Country Podcast. We are here for all of your classic country, rockabilly, early rock and roll, little gospel, little blues,
a lot of excellent country music themed recipes. And basically, we are here to keep your musical circle rocking, bopping, and very much unbroken. So thank you for sticking with us. We will see you down the road real soon. And again, whether it's in your home, in your community, wherever it is you do your thing, keep your circle unbroken. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you real soon.
Oh, can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
One of these days, and it won't be long, I'll rejoin them in a song. I'm gonna join the family circle at the throne. No, the circle won't be broken by and by, Lord, by and by.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.